Welcome to All Sides with Anna Staver. It's our weekly reporter roundtable, an hour where we catch up on the political news of last week and preview the week ahead. I'm your host, Anna Staver. It's our final roundtable before Election Day. And joining me to talk all things Ohio politics is Laura Hancock, politics and policy reporter for Cleveland.com. Welcome.
Good morning.
Megan Henry, reporter for the Ohio Capital Journal. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday.
And Danny Eldridge, reporter at Hannah News Service. Good morning.
Good morning.
Early voting is over in Ohio. Polls are closed today. They reopen tomorrow at 6:30 in the morning. Laura, let's talk turnout. A quarter of the state's registered voters have already cast their ballots, about 2.5 million people, according to the Secretary of State. Most of that was done in person, as the lines wrapping around Franklin County showed us yesterday. Does the turnout tell us anything?
Well, turnout used to say that these were Democratic voters. But the Republicans in the last two elections, so 2023 and this year, have been doing a campaign called Bank the Vote. And so they're trying to get people to vote early by mail-in ballot or, you know, show up early because they realize that's an advantage. I know candidates don't like it, right? They want to be able to campaign until the last minute. But and when you send your ballot in, if you sent your ballot in 10 days ago, it's done in your mind. You know, you're not thinking much about it anymore. But so now when you look at who has done all this early voting and mail-in, there's more Republicans who have done it than Democrats this time. But the biggest group by far is unaffiliated or independent voters. And you just don't know. Did they vote for Harris? Did they vote for Trump? Did they vote in the Senate race for Moreno? Did they vote for Sherrod Brown? You just don't know how people were voting.
Yeah, Danny, what's interesting is unaffiliated voters voted about 1.5 million unaffiliated voters cast their ballot, which is more than the Republicans and the registered Democrats combined. So all we really know in the tea leaves is Republicans are getting more comfortable with early voting.
Yeah, I think that's one of the main takeaways. And really, when you see unaffiliated voters, that just means they haven't voted in a partisan primary recently. So it's hard to tell. It's impossible to tell, really, what their ideology may be.
Now, in-person voting totals are ahead of where they were in 2016, but they're behind where they were in 2020, right?
Yes. In 2020, obviously, it could be an outlier because of the pandemic. A lot more people were voting by mail, obviously. But there were 3.4 million about at this time.
And it was very Democratic that year.
Yes.
More for social distancing because Trump was saying don't vote early. So a lot has shifted.
Right. But before 2020, Ohio had never had more than 2 million early votes cast. So this is still much higher than usual. And part of that probably is because Republicans are more comfortable with doing it at this point.
I thought one of the things I thought was interesting is last night I was looking at the dashboard the Ohio Secretary of State's office has on early voting, and I noticed most of the people were 65 and older.
Yeah.
Now, voters in general tend to skew older, but it's just interesting. I think everybody wants convenience from their government, and you're seeing even people who may not have the demands of having to get to work or run their kids to activities are now like, I want to vote on a Friday afternoon. I'm just going to go in. So that was interesting.
It's really an election season more than just a day at this point here in Ohio.
Much the way I like to celebrate my birthday. Megan, you know, one data point I really wish Ohio included, that some other states have included, is voting by gender, because there's this large national conversation about whether women are turning out in statistically significant numbers that could sway the election.
Yes, that is something that I do wish, as like a data nerd, that I wish Ohio had in their early voting numbers that they broke down. I know that Pennsylvania does, and I saw we were chatting earlier that seems like more than 50% of early voters in Pennsylvania are women.
And so now, women vote more than men generally. Don't know why that is. We just do. But yeah, that it's up even higher than the usual gap. And what does that mean? I'd love to have that answer here, too.
Me too. Maybe next year they'll do that.
Yeah, they've got a new dashboard, though, that's like super neat, that breaks it down by county, by percentage returns. And, you know, Laura, as the representative of Northeast Ohio Publications, what I found really interesting is Mahoning County in Northeast Ohio was running about even with Republican and Democrats returning their ballots. Trumbull County, which Senator Sherrod Brown says he'll win, mm-hmm. was about Democrats were outpacing Republicans the last time I checked. So that may be good news for Brown, but who knows?
And those are also both areas that Donald Trump won, but last time, but also Brown won. So it's very interesting. Brown thinks that if he can win those counties, he has it in the bag.
Yeah, let's talk about tomorrow night when we're all eating pizza and watching results. I want to know what you will be watching for. So, Danny, we usually see a blue mirage early in the night, and that just means Democrats traditionally vote early, so the results look a lot bluer than they end up being. Do you think that's going to be true this year?
I mean, it's hard to tell because there are more Republican votes than normal, but it really does depend on how the unaffiliated people break. I mean, that's the biggest thing to look for is... And we'll see that right away, too, because a lot of those will be counted already when the night starts.
Yes.
So we'll kind of see how a lot of the unaffiliated early voters broke at that point.
The first results that come in at 7:30, 7:45 mm-hmm. are usually just the early votes, which, I mean, a quarter of the vote, that's a large amount, but who knows? I kind of expect that maybe Brown will be ahead in the early results, but maybe by not as much as you would have expected in, say, like... 2018-2020. Like, as Republicans get more comfortable with early voting, I don't know that that mirage is quite as blue as it used to be.
I mean, that's certainly possible, but then...
Who knows?
It's hard to tell, you know, if these are new Republican voters, then that's definitely bad news for Democrats. If these are Republicans that have voted religiously in elections, you know, over the years in person on Election Day, then it's not going to really change a whole lot. So we're just going to have to see who shows up on Election Day, I guess.
We sound like every pollster in the country right now. It's close, and we'll have to wait and see. You know, three counties I'll be watching in the Brown-Marino race are Wood, Ottawa, and Ashtabula. Brown won them all in 2018, but Vance won them all in 2022. Another one, Megan, that seems to be really important is Delaware County. Mm-hmm. Everybody and their mother has been to Delaware, to Westerville, to Dublin, to the suburbs around Columbus.
Yes, Delaware County in particular recently has been more of a purple county. And so it's kind of a toss-up of how it will go for the presidential race and the Senate race. And yes, lots of stops by the candidates throughout Delaware.
Yeah. You know, Laura, control of the Senate probably hinges on Brown's race, or in large part will determine it. And control of the U.S. House could hinge on whether Democrats Marcy Kaptur and Amelia Sykes hold on to their seats as well. Republicans pulled out of the Kaptur race in 2022 after their candidate got all tangled up in questions about his military service. That's not the case this time. Mm-mm. Speaker Mike Johnson was just in town campaigning for Derek Marin, so that's going to be another nail biter.
I think so, too. Marcy Kaptur has a good experience, or she has good constituent services, which a lot of her supporters are hoping. And constituent services means, you know, hey, I'm having a problem with the U.S. Department of Health. I need a paper for something. You know, can you use your connections in the federal government to help me? And she's pretty good at that. So a lot of people are hoping that even if you're a Republican, you're going to remember something nice that she did for you and you're going to vote for her. Her opponent is Derek Marin, who's really influential. He's a state representative right now, and he's very influential. He is the leader of the right wing flank of the members of the Ohio House. And if at one point he was trying to become speaker, that didn't happen, but he was able to kind of get his supporters to peel off, and they kind of run their own thing and sometimes undermine the actual speaker. So he's pretty influential. He, I believe, was a city councilman in a town up there called Watertown, and before he was in the legislature, and his father, who's recently passed, but his father was a pastor up there, so he's a known name.
Yeah, that one's going to be close. I also think the Amelia Sykes race will be close. And if all these numbers and counties and places were hard to follow, we're putting up cheat sheets on what we'll be watching on election night on the All Sides Facebook page, wosu.org/allsides. You can also listen to 89.7 on election night or get your updates from our website. So Danny, Bill Clinton, Joyce Beatty, and Sherrod Brown walked in. No, they didn't walk into a bar. They were all up in Cleveland today to get the vote out. Turnout in Cuyahoga County is going to be key for Brown's reelection, right?
Yeah, I mean, Cuyahoga County has been very important for Democrats, especially now with some other parts of Northeast Ohio, like Mahoning County, becoming more Republican. So, I think that was one of the big reasons I think Barack Obama was able to win Ohio twice.
One of the reasons that Tim Ryan didn't get across the finish line, mm-hmm. like turnout in Cuyahoga County wasn't as big as he hoped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think that's a huge key. I mean, we'll see. I mean, if Kamala Harris can get out the vote as well as
yeah, it's interesting they picked Clinton, Beatty, and Brown.
Yeah, you know, I don't know exactly how much sway Bill Clinton has, but I think that you know there are people.
But it wasn't
who have
Harris.
Good, yeah,
and I think it wasn't Harris on purpose.
Well, yeah, I think that's probably yeah. for a reason and. Because Trump is still, I think, highly favored. But
yeah.
But some voters up there probably do have good memories of the Clinton years, so maybe that's what they're hoping for.
Yeah, Bernie Moreno is crossing the state in a big red bus with Donald Trump's face on it. Kind of unusual to see the Senate bus with somebody else's face. But Donald Trump Jr., Senator Lindsey Graham, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, Tucker Carlson... Megan, Bernie's brought in a lot of the conservative heavy hitters.
Yeah, it's definitely a list of who's who. I think Bernie is really banking on Ohio in 2016 and 2020, Trump winning in Ohio. And so I think he's really, since it's safe to say that Trump will likely win Ohio. And so I think he's really banking on riding on the coattails of the Republican ticket in Ohio.
Yeah, I mean, he's driving around a bus with Trump's face on it. That's like... I'm the guy. If you like Trump, you should like me. Also, Laura, more than $400 million has been spent for this Senate seat. It's about $50 per registered voter. It's hard for me to
conceive.
And
that is just the campaign money from the official money. There's also a lot of dark money involved. But it's the most expensive race in the history of the U.S. Senate. And, you know, like, we don't know how much is being spent this week. The final totals could well be over $500 million for the transparent part of the election money. So maybe a billion in all when you consider dark money. Insane. They very much, you know, one thing to contrast, Bernie Moreno is bringing the who's who of conservatism out to Ohio. Even though Sherrod Brown has the support of Chuck Schumer, and that's why he's got so much money to play with, you don't see Chuck Schumer in Ohio. You didn't see Sherrod Brown at the Democratic National Convention. You don't see, you know, a lot of he's kind of just doing it himself because he needs to make a case that, you know, he wants to fight for the dignity of work, which is kind of his thing. And some of the, you know, Green New Deal, sometimes some of that stuff does conflict with it. And so he needs to kind of keep the more lefty voices out and just focus on just himself, his own brand.
Yeah, I think, well, I was going to go back to the campaign ads. I have never seen more campaign ads. And also
goodness.
I mean, even my, you know, my kid watching YouTube, I mean, every other ad is Bernie Moreno or Sherrod
yeah.
Brown ad. And
my 7-year-old the other day came to me and asked whether Sherrod Brown wants to force kids to have sex changes. And I was like, oh my goodness. Like, you don't realize how much they're even just seeing the ads. They're almost inescapable. Even if we're watching, you know, Jeopardy on television at 7:30 at night, it's Bernie Moreno, Sherrod Brown. And it's some of these are like nasty ads. And I was like, oh, I don't like that she's seeing all this like negative ad.
Well, and the focus on the transgender people is not an accident. I mean, that's happening in Ohio. That's happening in states across the country with competitive Senate races. I was watching.
But it's repetitive enough that like my kid picked
right.
up on it.
Oh, exactly. Well, that's their goal.
Yeah. for election night coverage, if, in case you can't get enough of me in particular, I'm going to be on Spectrum, where I'll be providing election results and commentary. I'll be back in the All Sides hosting chair Wednesday morning, where both hours are going to be the latest in national and local election results. Coming up, whether federal dollars for the Intel plant will keep flowing under a Trump administration. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
No matter what happens in Washington, the NPR Politics Podcast is here for you. For the latest news, insights, and analysis from the election and beyond, listen to the NPR Politics Podcast.
You're listening to the All Sides Weekly Reporter Roundtable, where we talk all things Ohio politics. I'm your host, Anna Staber. Still with us is Laura Hancock, politics and policy reporter for Cleveland.com, Megan Henry, reporter for the Ohio Capital Journal, and Danny Eldridge, reporter at Hannah News Service. Intel's massive manufacturing plant in New Albany is now a campaign issue. The company says it's waiting for more than $8 billion in federal dollars from the CHIPS Act. Republicans blame the Biden administration for the delay, while the Department of Commerce says, look, it's not a grant. The program is a reimbursement for money Intel has spent, and they're waiting on a little more proof. Danny, is it way too late in the game for this to become an actual issue in Ohio?
I don't know. You never know, but for the election this year, is that what you're asking about? I don't see it being a big issue. I think that it's... I think people are more in like a wait and see mode. I don't think anyone thinks Intel. I mean, the governor said the other day, you know, they've already spent millions of dollars in breaking the ground, putting it in the ground. They're not going to leave Ohio. So,
yeah.
I think most people are kind of in a wait and see mode with this.
In an appearance on the Joe Rogan Experience, former President Donald Trump didn't mince words about the CHIPS Act, though.
That chip deal is so bad. We put up billions of dollars for rich companies to come in and borrow the money and build chip companies here, and they're not going to give us the good companies anyway.
His comments make me wonder whether he's saying that because it's a Biden program or because he actually would be looking to make changes to it, Laura.
I think probably he just wants –
I think Intel's a pretty good company to take advantage of it.
Right. Like, they're an American company, you know. I think he wants maybe his own thing to put his own name on it, and he wants to prove that his idea for tariffs, across the board tariffs, is going to work. So it's just going to delay anything that's going to happen. You really don't have anybody saying, I don't like Intel. I don't want it. Well, except maybe Trump, but you don't really have anybody in Ohio saying, I'm anti. You have the labor unions on board on the left. You have, you know, the business style Republicans on the right. Everybody wants this company. One of the things that I think the Biden administration is hesitating on before just writing a check is that Intel pulled out of a huge $30 billion chip manufacturing fab that they were going to build in Germany. And they got a bunch of their incentives, and then they left. And that was in September, I believe. And there are a lot of German politicians who are really mad. It was a waste of money for them. And so you might very well, I don't know exactly, obviously I'm not in the negotiations with Intel in the White House, but that might very well be. They want to see proof that they're not going to pull out. You know, when you read the stories about Intel, they may be like about a month ago, there was stories about whether they should be delisted from the stock market. There have been stories about Qualcomm and other companies potentially buying Intel. We already know that the Ohio One plant is going to be a subsidiary of Intel. That could be spun off to a different company. I mean, there's just a lot of questions right now. Intel was behind on AI. And so they are suffering in their earnings reports. I have a relative who worked there. They had to get rid of 15% of their workforce, which was 1.5 million people. My sister took a buyout. She was one of them, and she was there for 17 years. So yeah, I mean, they're just kind of, it's a classic, it's kind of sad, you know, it's a classic American company. It's kind of, you know, born here, and we don't really know what the future is going to be. They need to make some major changes in order to make Wall Street confident again.
House Speaker Mike Johnson said Friday that Republicans, quote, probably will try to repeal the CHIPS Act legislation. Then he quickly walked that back by saying they would work to streamline it instead. So we will have to wait and see. I mean, obviously, Trump would have to win the election first, which, you know, if you look at the polls, it's really anybody's game right now. So Springfield is back in the news. Governor DeWine says Trump's plan to revoke legal protections and deport Haitian immigrants living there would slow Springfield's economy. Megan, that puts him at odds with his party, no?
Yes, it's kind of interesting dichotomy, so to speak, since there is such a huge population of Haitian people in Springfield. And so they are really the backbone. They become the backbone of the economy in recent years. And so if those people were to leave, then yes, it would really hamper Springfield, so to speak. And so DeWine is very against that happening if Trump were to be elected and if he were to actually put that plan in motion. It is interesting that DeWine says he wants to vote for Trump, even though this would clearly affect Ohio significantly.
Yeah, he says he's planning to vote a straight Republican ticket tomorrow. I don't think he's voted early.
I don't believe so.
Also, Danny, Bernie Moreno was asked about this question. He says the Haitians are legally allowed to be here until February of 2026, but after that they should, quote, make plans to leave.
I mean, yeah.
This is hard to predict what would actually happen, because the last time around, Trump did try to modify some of these temporary protected statuses, and it ended up in court. And by the time it was finally moving towards a resolution, Trump wasn't reelected, and Biden was like, no, we can keep it.
So. Right. So, obviously a lot of this hinges on the election. And then if Trump does win, how quickly will he get this, whatever policy this is, how quickly will he get it through the rules process to take away their temporary protected status?
And they can sue, and then it's in court, and then they get to stay here while they sue.
And who knows what, you know, a lot of these businesses that will be affected may also join lawsuits this time. This isn't just going to be, I would imagine it won't just be civil liberties groups suing. It could be businesses that will be negatively affected by this.
Ohio's Supreme Court says our state attorney general can't weigh in on the titles of proposed constitutional amendments. This is a little wonky, but Danny, this case was not about the accuracy of the title for the specific Ohio Voters Bill of Rights, but it was whether Yost has the authority to comment on it, which I found really, it's like some of the federal like gun law. Right. It's not about whether the Second Amendment would ban bomb stocks, but it's about whether the law allows you to.
Right. This is a strange one. I mean, you're right. This is really in the weeds here with what the.
It's interesting, right? So it was about this Ohio Voters Bill of Rights, which Yost was like, this is inaccurate. It's a bunch of stuff, right? It's like same-day voter registration. It's about having multiple drop boxes in a county. It's like a lot of make-it-easier-to-vote type things that Yost says could increase voter fraud. So he's obviously opposed to this, but then he rejected it not on the summary, but on the title.
Right. And I think that's where the problem was, because there have been other amendments that have been called a Bill of Rights before that were certified, even if someone may disagree with the notion that those are a quote unquote Bill of Rights.
And I believe, wasn't this an anonymous or not anonymous, unanimous?
Yes.
Which
is unusual,
because you don't see that on such political issues. You generally see things divided by party with this court, but they were kind of all like, no, next, you know, kind of like that.
Yeah. I don't think Yost has responded to the Supreme Court's decision, but Megan, I do think it's important because we seem to be going to the ballot more and more. If you look at marijuana, abortion, redistricting, we may have minimum wage. The title is just one step in the process where it can get hung up.
Right, exactly. There's lots of steps, lots of hoops to jump through to get a ballot initiative on a ballot. And I think we've seen that especially with a super majority with the Republicans. It's hard to get it can be hard to get things passed or get things to move. And so if the will of the voters, if a group is like, I want to get this issue on the ballot that is not being addressed or really seeing much movement in the state house, then that is a way to that's a vehicle to do it. But there are lots of then hoops to jump through.
So and then the court didn't order him to approve it either.
No.
He just has to revisit. He just has to go back and he can deny it for other reasons.
Yeah.
Maybe
he just doesn't have the authority to deny it on the title.
Right.
Very technical, but in some ways important. Another judge in another case sided with the state when it comes to how newly naturalized citizens can vote. Secretary of State Frank LaRose is requiring folks whose license still says non-citizen, but they are now a citizen, they just haven't gotten a new driver's license, they will need to bring proof of citizenship. On social media, LaRose celebrated the decision, saying, "You can't make this up. The ACLU sued me to try and force me to accept non-citizen IDs without proof of citizenship." So, Laura, this is just, it's just another case.
Right. And it's relatively new in Ohio. I think it's just the last two elections where you have to bring your ID. And so this is kind of the larger question about, you know, picture IDs and you have to bring those. And so he's coming from the perspective of he's pro photo ID and he's pro, you know, basically rejecting people whose thing says that they're not citizens. I think that the voter, you know, the more democracy style groups, they would say that they don't even want voter ID. That's just creating another hurdle for people who don't have a driver's license or a state ID, just creates another hurdle.
LaRose did send letters to newly naturalized citizens, warning them that they need to update their license or bring this additional piece of information. So bottom line, if you or someone you know, their driver's license, their ID still says non-citizen, then you need to bring a passport or your naturalization papers, like some official proof of citizenship. And if you forget it on Tuesday, you can vote provisionally and come back and provide the proof later, and then your vote will count. So you do have that option. If they tell you you can't vote, that's inaccurate, you can vote provisionally, and then you can come back with the proof later. So election day may be tomorrow, but there's another important election coming at the end of the November. That's when Ohio House Republicans will choose who they want to be the next speaker. Danny, Republicans are going to win a majority of the seats in the House. That's probably a given. Mm-hmm. But who will lead them is still up in the air.
Yeah. I mean, it's not really a secret that Senate President Matt Huffman is looking to become the House Speaker.
House Speaker Matt Huffman.
Yes. And he wants to take out the current House Speaker. He would if he runs against him, Jason Stevens.
Yeah, you recently did a story on what their campaign spending says about this race. So
yes, so both of them are giving quite a bit of money to certain House Republican candidates.
You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours.
I mean, that could be what's going on.
Or just like, hey, let me help you out there.
So, and some of them, they're giving to both. Some representatives are getting money from Huffman and Stevens.
Which kind of tells you what they think about which way their vote could go for Speaker.
Right. So those may be the most toss-up candidates, I guess. I don't know. But it is telling, though, that they are spending, you know, thousands of dollars of their campaign money on specific House Republican candidates.
Laura, the fight in the House in the last 2 years of the last General Assembly really deadlocked things because House Republicans had a majority, a supermajority, mm-hmm. but they were divided and they argued and they blocked each other's legislation. Mm-hmm. And we ended up, so far, we're on record to pass like the fewest number of bills in modern times.
Since like the 50s, I think. And it's a problem because, right, I mean, lame duck is going to be insane, right? Because each chamber is sitting on dozens of bills that were passed from the other chamber that they're holding hostage. And so what is actually going to get through and quickly passed by the end of this year, which is the end of the 2-year legislative session. So they have to pass it or it dies. And while Matt Huffman and Jason Stevens are not speaking to each other, their people are. So you can expect possibly to see some huge, what we call Christmas tree bills, and the ornaments are just like crazy things that are unrelated.
Yeah, last lame duck, it was the chicken bill that became about fracking in state parks.
Yes, yes. And you see all the other things like that. And so it'll be interesting to see how this all shapes up. I've also heard that, I mean, there's some lobbyists who've told me, oh, well, they're just not getting along so much that potentially there's nothing going to happen in lame duck. They will be paralyzed by their fighting. And so they'll just pass a couple bills, you know, but most things will not get through. We'll see. Governor DeWine might also try to use some of his political capital to get certain things that are priorities to him passed. And in doing so, he might say, well, I want this bill passed, and so maybe we can throw a couple things that you guys want in these areas in, you know. So we really don't know. That kind of stuff happens mostly behind the scenes, which is really a disadvantage to the public. We don't, because all of a sudden a bill that you thought was about snow plowing is now about children, you know, and reading or something. And maybe some parents want to run down to Columbus and testify on it. But that, you know, everything gets passed and, you know, everything's behind the scenes and everything just becomes part of the bill and passes just within hours. So we'll see.
Yeah. The vote for House Speaker is going to take place at the beginning of the lame duck session. So hopefully if it's overwhelming one way or the other, maybe we'll have some resolve. But Megan, there was a vote last go around for House Speaker, and it was Derek Marin, who we were talking about earlier. And then come like swearing in day, it was Jason Stevens. So just because one of them gets a majority of the House Republicans doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be Speaker.
Right. Yes, that was before I was covering the state politics, but I believe that was the courtesy of the Blue 22. So I'm going to pass it off to either of my colleagues here.
Yeah. So Stevens worked with Democrats. Actually, all the Democrats voted for Stevens plus 22 Republicans. And then he had a technical majority and he became Speaker.
Right. And, you know, I imagine that Speaker Stevens will want to retain those votes, and will. So yeah. That's another thing to look for in lame duck is, well, he may not want to do anything that would anger Democrats too much during lame duck if he's going to be counting on them for votes for Speaker.
Yeah.
So
it's going to be a fun couple of post-election months. Mm-hmm. You know, we've been talking a lot about the top of the ticket this hour and about the race for control of the legislature, but Ohio is also voting on whether to change how we draw the districts and the boundaries for all of these candidates. A Bowling Green YouGov poll shows yes on issue one, leading 57% to 34%, with 9% still unsure. Laura, that would put this issue one on par with the two issue ones from last year.
Yes, and the lots of money, when you look at the amount of money that's been raised and spent on the pro side versus the negative side, they haven't really raised or spent that much money, the people who are against it. But even if it does pass, there's always a chance that, like, the Ohio GOP, which of course does not want the system to change, the system benefits them. They could always sue. And we have a Republican majority state Supreme Court that often kind of rubber stamps what they pass in the legislature. So they would probably be getting a sympathetic ear there. And so that's one way that they could shut this down, or even citizens who disagree with it could file a lawsuit. So I don't know. I mean, it's got a good chance of winning. Who knows if it will see the light of day.
And a reminder, if you're still trying to decide on any of the races on your ballot, you can find all kinds of reliable information about every issue in WOSU's online voter guide. Coming up, overdose deaths are down in Ohio for the second year in a row. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
No matter what happens in Washington, the NPR Politics Podcast is here for you. For the latest news, insights, and analysis from the election and beyond, listen to the NPR Politics Podcast.
You're listening to the All Sides Weekly Reporter Roundtable. I'm your host, Anna Staver. Still with us is Laura Hancock, politics and policy reporter for Cleveland.com, Megan Henry, reporter for the Ohio Capital Journal, and Danny Eldridge, reporter at Hannah News Service. Overdose deaths in Ohio are down for the second year in a row. That's good news, Laura. Does the state have any theories about why?
It's always hard. We have correlations. You know, correlation's not always causation. But one big thing is that the state distributes naloxone for free. So, and this is just anyone. No shame in just having it in case you know have a loved one with a drug problem. It's naloxone.ohio.gov, and you can get a kit. Naloxone is like a opioid reversal medication, like it's for overdoses. 4,500 people died in 2023 of unintentional overdose deaths. I think it was like 78% of them involved fentanyl. So even if you had like cocaine in your system, most likely there was fentanyl also in that cocaine. And this puts Ohio at number 12, which is still pretty high nationally in number of opioid deaths per 100,000 people. But this is actually like super good news for Ohio because we used to be like number 2 after West Virginia like 7 years ago in opioid deaths per 100,000, and now we are to 12th. So the state also thinks that, you know, prevention things that they've done. There's also testing strips the state distributes where you can test for fentanyl in your drugs. They have recovery housing that the state has done where you can enter a program, try to get clean. They have also increased enforcement, you know, arresting people with lots of, you know, high levels of drugs. So they're saying that all of this together is working to decrease. We also may very well be seeing, I mean, that opioids flashed and flared up in Ohio early, and maybe other states are now having their turn with that. There is a theory, I don't know, a lot of people think it's suspicious, but the Sinaloa cartel, a lot of the main people have been taken down. The father is in prison in Colorado. The son just turned himself in. So there's a lot of people who believe that maybe the amount of fentanyl in the drug supply in the United States in general is not as deadly. So that's a theory also.
I will say about 12 people still die a day from overdose deaths here in Ohio. So it's good that it's down 9%, but we do have more work to do. Danny, there's a new organization in Ohio, a Christian Chamber of Commerce called the Christian Business Partnership. What can you tell us about that?
Okay, well, so it has a new leader. It actually started about a year ago, and it's connected to the Center for Christian Virtue, which is a major lobbying group for conservatives.
They're also really big in the school voucher, school choice movement.
So previously, someone who was working as their COO was leading this Christian Chamber of Commerce. They call it the Christian Business Partnership. But they are now hiring someone separately so that that person can focus on their
So they're trying to build it out more.
Right. And so who they hired was Monty Lobb, who actually ran CCV when they were Citizens for Community Values in the early 90s.
So prior to Aaron Baer, he's the new head.
Yeah. Yes.
And Lobb used to work for Republican Secretary of State Ken Blackwell.
Yes. That is, I mean, he's had quite a few jobs over the years. That's one of the most significant ones.
The Buckeyes defeated the Nittany Lions over the weekend. Go Bucks. But that's not the only big news coming out of the Big Ten. Laura, can you tell us about the Early Learning Alliance?
So there's an Early Childhood Learning Alliance. You're seeing this discussion nationally, even, you know, chambers of commerce, early childhood groups, state governments, they're putting more money into daycare and preschool, and they are putting more like requirements around, you know, whether you qualify for subsidies and what does a subsidized daycare have to offer, that kind of thing. So because you're seeing all this movement, there is this new group. It's 14 schools in the Big Ten, and it's like Purdue. OSU is one of the coordinating schools where they kind of coordinate all the research. Rutgers is also the co-coordinator. you know, you're seeing University of Nebraska, Lincoln, University of Michigan, Michigan State, University, there's a bunch of them. Anyway, they are just doing, there's 40 professors at these schools, and they're just doing research on what works, what is effective for kids, you know, in this group of under age five. And they want to know what is quality, you know, they want to suggest quality daycare and quality preschool. So anybody can kind of hang a shingle, but is it quality? And in Ohio, we have 800,000 little ones, age five and under, and 18,000 of those kids are in state subsidized childcare programs. And so the average subsidy is around $4,000, which quality childcare and preschool in Ohio costs around $12,000 a year. So $4,000 is obviously not cutting it. At OSU, they have a daycare that for, and they do subsidize kids. And what they told me they were doing was they were building multiple, they were layering funding. So you might have the state program that provides something like 2 days a week, and then you maybe get some Head Start funding from the federal government, and that helps. You know, you just kind of layer all these things to try to get the kids mostly covered. A lot of parents do have copays, probably most. Some parents are totally 100% free, but, you know, a lot of families do pay copays.
Yeah, childcare, Megan, is an ongoing conversation at the State House, just in, not from, you know, step up to quality and whether that's restrictive or whether that's ensuring these quality kinds of daycares to what it costs and whether we should raise that level for state subsidized childcare. Because, yeah, I mean, as somebody who has two tiny humans who are now both full time in school, thank God, it is not cheap.
Yes, yes. Childcare is extremely expensive. And I think going back to the COVID pandemic kind of really highlighted that, and just like the importance of childcare. And when childcare centers like closed because of the pandemic, parents were really left scrambling. And I feel like not all those childcare centers have really recovered since then.
Let's keep a little bit with the football theme. I want to talk about the Cleveland Browns. Specifically, Danny, the fact that the Browns are taking legal action after team owners Jimmy and Dee Haslam announced plans to move to a domed stadium in the suburb of Brook Park. What is the Modell Law, and why does this all matter?
So the Modell Law was passed in the mid-90s, and it's named after former Browns owner Art Modell, who famously or infamously moved the Cleveland Browns to Baltimore to become the Baltimore Ravens. After that happened, state lawmakers, including Dennis Kucinich, who's also now a former U.S. representative and as he's running for Congress as an independent right now.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
He helped write a law that would put restrictions on professional sports teams when they from moving. So what the Browns are arguing is the law is vague. That it's hard to understand what, you know, what the restrictions actually are. So they're trying to get it ruled unconstitutional. So we'll see where it goes. It's in federal court.
Yeah. And Senator Brown has actually tried to make this a bit of a campaign issue since the Haslams are funding his opponent, Bernie Moreno. Don't know if that's landing.
And David Yost is actually on the side of the city of Cleveland, saying he believes that the law is pretty clear. The law requires you to try to find a local owner before you up and leave. One of the things the Browns owners, the Haslam's question is, isn't this just for out-of-state moves? We're just moving 5-10 miles south, you know. So there, so that's going to be something that the court's going to have to look at after this is all done and settled. Then the Haslams are going to ask the state for billions of dollars to build the stadium. That's the other thing. And that's kind of a lot because they themselves are billionaires. They own Pilot, Flying J, like truck stops, and some other businesses. And they're looking at buying. There's a rumor that they might be looking at buying the Minnesota Twins. And that they might.
They're not hurting for money.
Yeah, yeah. And so, but, you know, that's the thing. It would be one thing if it was just like Cleveland and done. But we also have the Bengals. We also have, you know, like every city has major league sports. And so this could really cost a lot of money.
Yeah, we did a show a while back on whether public entities like cities, counties, states should subsidize the cost of stadiums, and people had really big feelings about that.
Well, it's also interesting that the Haslams actually used the Modell Law partially to help buy the Columbus Crew when they were thinking of moving the Crew out of state. So now kind of a different position on that law.
Megan, the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals heard oral arguments in a lawsuit brought by several families from Bethel Local School District over a transgender girl's use of the girls' restroom. So can you give us a summary of the arguments in this case?
Yes. Yeah, so this actually started as a federal case, and the court dismissed it. And so the plaintiffs, then these parents who are upset over the school district's transgender bathroom policy, then appealed it. And so basically a summary of the arguments that was heard last week was the parents' argument is that this is giving special priority to secular beliefs and LGBTQ students over religious students. And many of these plaintiffs cited their religious beliefs as a reason why they are opposing this policy. And then the defendants, the school district, was saying how it's not religious students versus LGBTQ students, and how it's only really an issue for these religious students when the transgender student is using the restroom, whereas for the transgender student, it is always an issue for them when it comes to using the bathroom that matches their gender identity.
Don't know why my iPad was dinging, but we have just a couple of minutes left, and I thought we should talk about some voting do's and don'ts. But a quick reminder, if you're still looking for information on things like the Link Us sales tax, you can find it all at WOSU's Voter Guide. So you can't take a photo of your completed ballot. It's a fifth-degree felony here in Ohio, carries a fine of up to $2,500, though I don't know how often that's actually enforced. But Frank LaRose apparently has released new guidance that will allow you to wear clothes with political slogans into your polling place. So if you want to wear your Make America Great Again hat, or you want to wear your Harris Walz hat, apparently you are. You're okay. You don't have to take it off to go vote. But, you know, Danny, one of the things that still hasn't been decided is whether Jill Stein's votes will count. I mean, I feel like this is kind of a moot point now. She is technically on the ballot, but when I went to vote, there was a little note that said, hey, if you vote for Jill, it's not going to count.
Yeah, this situation is very convoluted. So I'm not really an expert on this. I don't know if you guys have written about this more than me, but
basically, there's a leader in the Ohio Green Party is listed as her VEEP, but her actual VEEP is someone else. And there's some allegations with the state party against the national party that there wasn't enough communication in enough time. And so in the end, this is all, I don't know the details of it, but basically it probably isn't going to count if you vote for her today or tomorrow. And there was a problem. There was a question about who her vice president candidate was going to be. So they put this other person's name down, and now there's still a lawsuit over that. And it's not going to count.
But we're not a swing state. I mean, I don't know that the Jill Stein vote was going to swing it for Trump or Harris in the state of Ohio. This would probably be a bigger deal if we were Pennsylvania or Michigan or something.
Right. The Green Party isn't always considered what we have a major party. Major party means that they always get a significant and a high enough percentage of the vote that they're going to always be on the ballot. Minor parties have to prove that they get certain percentage of the vote in the previous election to give them a spot guaranteed in the next election on the ballot. Green Party is a minor party.
And according to the Secretary of State's office, you can't offer voters food, drinks, discounts, or money within the neutral zone of a polling location. But I have before seen just outside that 100-yard barrier, they can be making milkshakes and you can go get one after you vote, depending on the day and depending on the weather. So they can't come within 100 yards, but you will probably see campaigns and setups, or at least I did at the Delaware County Board of Election early voting. And Megan, if you're in line when the polls close, what do?
You stay in line.
Yes. All absentee ballots must be returned to your Board of Elections by 7:30 if you are doing it in person. Otherwise, they need to be postmarked by tomorrow. So if you forget to put it in the mail and your mailman has come, you need to go drive it to your county board of elections. And I think that will do it. You can find coverage of the election tomorrow night on 89.7 NPR News or on our website, WOSU.org. Thanks so much to Laura Hancock, politics and policy reporter for Cleveland.com.
It's been fun.
Megan Henry, reporter for the Ohio Capital Journal.
Thanks for having me.
And Danny Eldridge, reporter for Hannah News.
Thanks for having me.
That'll do it for this hour on All Sides. Thanks for listening.